Schlereth and Evans on Denver's Sports Station, 104.3 The Fan.
I just thought it was fitting because the moment that Russ landed here, you know, we were talking to all the people in Seattle, what to expect and everything like that. And then throughout Russ's first season, we had Brock Huard on, who is on our sister station in Seattle.
Does a phenomenal job out there.
Terrific college and pro football analyst, and it just really tied in. And so we're always interested to get his Russ perspective. Now that it has ended, I thought it would be fitting to go full circle and have Brock on. And Brock, feel free to take your victory lap if
you'd
like.
What do you mean?
Pat yourself on the back.
No, I don't.
Come on, you saw this coming, didn't you?
That is not how we operate in the Pacific Northwest, okay? We are passive aggressive sissies. That's the way we work. It is telling, though, that the difference between the two goodbyes. I mean, the goodbye yesterday was just profound. I mean, it was long. I'm looking through my little email here. Here was his goodbye to Seattle, by the way. Let's see, March 9th of 2022. Seattle, I love you. Forever grateful. Number 3.
That was it.
A very, very different goodbye a couple years ago than the long soliloquy that he left for 15 of his teammates and Wendy the Windy Lady and everybody else. So very different goodbyes between the two places, and just a bummer. Nobody in Seattle was rooting, certainly this year, maybe the year before, because of that, you know, that big draft pick and Devin Witherspoon coming at number 5. But I think the majority of people were not rooting against Russell and hoping he failed as miserably as he failed the last couple of years. And frankly, it's, you know, just personally, individually, that dude helped build our radio show. He and Pete Carroll helped build, as you guys know, and doing this business. You know, at times you're prisoner to your partners and their success, their failures. And that thing took off like a skyrocket in 11 and 12 and 13 and 14 and 15. And, you know, we benefited immensely from it. And unfortunately, the ego and the deterioration of the skills was just, man, it came really hard and really fast.
Yeah, you know, I think that even you were a bit surprised, though. And
yes,
the hollow numbers last year, 26 and 8, and they were hollow because there are so many things he doesn't do, complete the ball in the middle of the field, you know, anticipate open receivers, you know, the anticipatory throw guys open. There's just a lot of things that he doesn't do, but I think even you were surprised on what a failure this actually was.
Yeah, because I still think, and I think if he lands in Pittsburgh, and I was listening to you guys talk on my way to get some coffee, and he lands in the right system that simplifies things, and you play off of a heavy run game and heavy play action, I mean, that he's still capable of doing that. And he showed that last year, you know, Mark, with some of those touchdowns he threw and into very tight windows deep down the field. His deep ball, I think, is still there. I don't think he's lost any horsepower on that. But it's the sacks. It is just, as you said, the inability to attack areas of the field. The non-fit with Sean Payton from the very, very jump, just in scheme and in style and everything else. And I think he'll land. I think he'll land in his heart of hearts. I think he wants to go to Pittsburgh. I think that would be his number one spot because of defense, because of identity, because of that run game, because of play pass with Arthur Smith there. And if Arthur could get Ryan Tannehill to an AFC championship game, I think in his heart, he believes that's the system that I need to be in now.
You know, we look back, Brock Huard joining us right now. I look back on it all, and when the deal first went down, we started talking to folks like you and Mark, of course, with all of his experience calling Seattle games in Seattle. There were some red flags that were raised, and we were so caught up in the excitement of the deal that we overlooked those. But as you were sitting there knowing what you knew about your experience with Russ in Seattle, was there part of you that, you know, hey, Denver, slow your roll a little bit. There are some issues that you're going to be dealing with. Did you see some of this coming?
Oh, I think so, certainly, and personality-wise. And, man, if you burn a bridge with Pete Carroll, that's hard to do. I mean, think about, like, Earl Thomas getting carted off the field in Arizona, flipping him off. Think about the scorched earth that Richard Sherman left on his way out down to San Francisco, and yet on the other end of it, there was still Pete playing the long game. And hey, I'm here with you. And to, you know, really have soured that relationship was probably, quite honestly, the biggest red flag. Because that guy is a defender of players. That guy and Pete Carroll just loved his guys unequivocally and never, and you know, we would ask him all the time, maybe a little bit more off the air than on the air, but like, how do you do this? How do you just let these guys talk like that? How do you let them burn these bridges? And, you know, he was kind of that, you know, grandfatherly wisdom. Like, no, it'll be good. We'll be all right. We'll circle back. And I always play the long game with guys. And to see, and Mark, you were there for some of that and obviously knew some of that, how soured the relationship was there with Russ and the organization. That was probably, quite honestly, the biggest red flag of all.
Yeah, you know, the interesting thing, in hindsight being 2020, I probably should have seen it better coming into this thing. But I thought Seattle did a phenomenal job as an organization of managing that and never really letting it become public.
Yeah.
And that's the thing that blows me away. And that's continuity,
Mark, right?
Yeah.
I mean, when you have John and Pete married together for 14 years, guess what they know how to do? Bury the bodies, right? They know how to put them in the closet. They know how to not let it out. I mean, that was an enormous strength of those guys to put their ego aside. And I mean, you saw that in the successful organizations you were in, right? In Washington and Denver, with continuity, with coaching staff, like that's how you do it. When you have the turnstile that you have with ownership, with GMs, with head coaches, you just don't have, I think, that same ability to do what Pete and John did.
Yeah. Yeah, no question about it. Hey, Brock, man, you're the best. I know you've got a show to go do in Seattle, so give Sulk and everybody over there our best. And
Mike, we'll have you on tomorrow. Yeah. We'll do a big victory lap.
Yeah.
Just apologize.
You guys got us.
You got us, man.
You got us.
You catfished us, man.
But it's over. Okay?
Yes. Now we move forward.
Yes. Now we know. What was that old linebacker, Manti Te'o?
Yeah.
It was a fake.
Yeah.
Okay, we're done.
Yeah. Even Manti said, boy, Seattle really got him.
And now we're getting excited about Mike Kliss's group of four that he's reporting. Sam Darnold, Mason Rudolph, Ryan Tannehill, and Jacoby Brissett.
Yeah.
Yay! Here we go.
Better.
Later for you.
See ya.
All right, there he goes. Brock Huard.
I love that guy.
I had to.
I got to be honest. I love that guy. Boy, he knows how to twist the knife and do it so subtly.
So gracefully.
Yeah.
It's like a Greg Maddux 0-for-4. You know, thank you. The most comfortable 0-for-4 there is, right?
Right. You never felt like he never brushed you back.
Right.
You never felt like
right.
he got high heat to the noggin.
Yeah, he nibbled a little bit. Ah, he caught me on the corner. All right. Yeah. Hey, next time, I'll get him.
Looking twice. Right. Great pitches.
All right. Well, hey. You know, it's over, right? It's time. It's over. No need to dwell on it anymore. It's now all about what do you do next? What do you do now? What do you do moving forward? And just to repeat, Mike Kliss was on with us about an hour ago, and he said, "Hey, just some of the things I'm hearing. Free agency's up next, and expect the Broncos to sign a free agent quarterback. And the four guys that he mentioned that he's been hearing, he wasn't limiting." It to these four, but he was hearing these four. Sam Darnold, which is music to your ears, Mark. Mason Rudolph, who really did a nice job for Pittsburgh in getting them into the playoffs. Ryan Tannehill, who was awesome about 3 years ago, but has really fallen off the cliff since then. And Jacoby Brissett, who is a good, solid bridge pro.
Jacoby's a pro now. He's a big-time pro. But I don't know that anybody looks at him as your long-term solution. I don't believe they do. So, but he's a pro. There ain't no question. Met with him last year in Washington, and then he didn't play. The sudden bent down stretched and my hamstring got tight because, the organization didn't want actually me to hit any bonuses.
Oh, jeez.
Hamstring.
Great. Awesome. So free agency, I'm fascinated to see what they do with free agency because it should be a direct tell as to what they're going to be doing in the draft.
Correct.
Should be a direct tell.
Yeah, because like I said, on these four guys, there are two that are bridge quarterbacks in my mind. There's one that is not really a bridge guy, so he would be a competing for a backup spot. That's Mason Rudolph. So the bridge guys are Jacoby Brissett. The bridge guy is Ryan Tannehill. Then the competing for a backup position as Mason Rudolph if you decided that Stidham isn't your guy or whatever. And then the one guy that I think you could look at as the potential of a Baker Mayfield resurgence is Sam Darnold. That's how you have to look at these guys.
So when I first started looking at this, my first reaction was, okay, so where does Stidham fit in all this? But then I sit back and look at it and say, more the merrier. When you have no answer, then I'd like there to be multiple guys in this quarterback room. I have no problem. Three, four guys. I don't care. You know, this idea that you have to anoint somebody is ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
And why is it that these quarterbacks are so fragile, I guess, that they have to be anointed and propped up as being the man?
Right.
Because what? Competition scares them? That's why my plan was keep Stidham, sign Darnold, draft or trade for Mac Jones.
Right.
And just have a quarterback free-for-all of three guys who are hungry to get another opportunity or make the most of their first opportunity to be a starter in this league and have at it. And bet, let the best man win. Because otherwise, you draft a quarterback and immediately that quarterback is the guy and it's all about elevating that guy and propping him up and making sure that he doesn't have to look over his shoulder and be worried about anybody. It seems so stupid to me, especially for a team that's tried everything at the quarterback position over the last 8-9 years. Why not just bring in as many quarterback bodies as you can? Mm-hmm. And here you go. Best man wins.
I've never been a fan of, well, that's a position we can't compete at. Like, we compete at every other position, but we're not going to compete at the quarterback position. Well, we can't have our quarterback looking over his shoulder. Well, you know what? If your quarterback is made of the right stuff, he's not going to be looking over his shoulder because he's better than the rest of the guys, and he knows it. I've never understood that in the ultimate tough guy game, that weak attitude, that weak kind of constitution at that position.
Texter says, I still don't see how any of these guys you're listing are going to perform better than Russell Wilson did. It's, at least to start, you need a different word other than perform. It's not about necessarily performing better. It's about a fit. It's a fit for Sean Payton. Sean Payton was hired to come in here and put his philosophy, his system, his beliefs into place. He tried it for a year with Russell Wilson to see if it would fit. He decided it's not. Okay, now moving forward, this is what you hired him for. This is what you're paying him for. You got to give him a chance to find quarterbacks that he fits with. So that's what this is all about. This is all about finding the quarterbacks that Sean Payton feels he can fit with. That's all it is.
Here's the problem with numbers. You manipulated your offense to take care of some of Russell's strengths. Russell compiled, decent statistics with 26 touchdowns and 8 interceptions. And that's what you see. As a fan, you see statistics. You know what I see? Missed opportunities all over the football field in every single game. And I'm talking about missed opportunities that win you the majority of those games. I'm seeing with a quarterback that can actually throw those in-cutting routes in the middle of the football field, those intermediate in-cutting routes, the digs, exposing the dagger concept. Throwing it to the tight end in the middle of the football field, the seams that come wide open, to be able to do those things, you're talking about a playoff team. The Broncos should have been a playoff team last year if you could have done the things that are required from the quarterback position. You couldn't. But you get clouded with 26-8 and you think it's good, and it really wasn't.
This is KKFN, KKFN HD1, Longmont, Denver.